That's what the Supreme
Court. The Supreme Court decided the menorah was okay. It wasn't really, actually, we thought it really wasn't either, but wasn't really a religious symbol. But the creche was definitely, and that was could not be there. And the Christmas tree had to be surrounded by reindeer and things like that to make it a Christmas season thing, and that's what they have now. Banners saying, welcome, we have sparkle season. That was their decision, and that's what's come down.
Can you tell us the name of the case and...
I'm trying to think, what in the world was the name of the case? It was something versus Allegheny County. ACLU, I think, versus Allegheny County. I think who was, it would be the lead plaintiff, and I can't even remember who the lead plaintiff was in the case. But we went in ourselves also, but we had plaintiffs in the case.
How did attorneys get involved with the ACLU, and what was the relationship between the ACLU and the people that helped?
Very good relationship. Attorneys get involved, but when we call them up, if they can call us, we call them. You have a number of attorneys who are interested in constitutional law, generally don't have a chance to practice it, but are interested in various aspects of it. And they would contact us and say they'd be willing to be what we have, a legal committee, or help out. Then you network around a lot and find attorneys who are interested in working on cases. Now, they don't get paid for this. They keep record, and we get attorney fees, and then they can get part of their attorney fee for the part of work they do. But we put out, for one thing, all the money to file the fee, file the cases, which takes a lot, to do all the research, which takes a lot of money, copying, all the papers. The ACLU pays for all of that. So most of the, these big cases are extremely expensive. And many attorneys, and there are a number of cases that have been handled by big law firms. They do it a pro bono type thing. Quite often if they're a big law firm, they'll do all the copying and stuff, but they keep track, so we reimburse and things of that sort. But the attorneys don't get paid their $500, $300 an hour type stuff. They do it, in fact, attorneys are required to do, and law firms too, a certain percentage of pro bono work, and a lot of it is ACLU work. And they have a chance of going into court that they wouldn't have otherwise.
How does the ACLU get its financial resources?
How do we get our money? We get our money from our members. Pretty much how we do it. Fundraising, we have a fundraising event or something of that sort. We get a lot, and we get it from the attorney fees when we win a case. We're in the Supreme Court more than any other agency besides the Department of Justice.
Was part of your responsibility with the organization fundraising?
Yeah, when you're director, or even when I was associate director, part of it was fundraising, planning, getting volunteers coming into the office, helping answer the phone, sending out mailings, pretty much doing sort of everything. Yeah.
What kind of fundraising did you
do? We used to have dinners. We have speakers, programs of that sort.
I was curious about how somebody would make contact with the ACLU. Did the ACLU hear of issues or hear of situations and then contact people, or do people contact the ACLU?
Both. Generally, somebody, say, they're doing, well, let's see, they're praying in school, say, and a parent doesn't like it and the school won't change it, they will call the ACLU and we will try to get something done on it. And if we can't, we try certainly not to go into court, mostly because going to court costs you a lot of money. And you can't, you don't always win, and you don't win right away in any event. So we try to mediate, we try to conciliate, and if we can't, then we, you know, we go into court. Other times we hear of a situation sometimes, and we're permitted by the Supreme Court actually to seek clients. And if we hear something is going on that is not good, we will sort of put out feelers, is anybody interested in being a named plaintiff into a case. We often try to get other plaintiffs. Sometimes someone will bring an issue to us and say they'd rather not be named. I mean, when we, not locally, but when the Doe case on right to choose, we can go in anonymously, and but we practically always have to have somebody who's complained or somebody who's willing to complain. Mm-hmm. And sometimes that can be particularly in religious cases, very hazardous for the plaintiff, and you have to explain that to the plaintiff. The people in Brownsville who objected in a school prayer case, they had firebombs and they had crosses burned, and it was pretty miserable for them. Mm. It can be very bad.
What was going on when the ACLU started in Pittsburgh? Was there something that prompted the beginning of a chapter in Pittsburgh? And what time period?
That was, they were, as I say, around just before I joined. So I know the HUAC thing was fairly important, and that may have been what got them started. ACLU started itself in 1920.
What's the HUAC?
House Un-American Activities Committee. Okay. HUAC. Yeah, it was. It was a terrible time.
On a personal side, I was wondering if there were times when your personal beliefs were in conflict with the position that the ACLU was taking, or even the position that the ACLU.
Yeah, you don't always, and I can't right off the top of my head think of when I've disagreed, but there have been times you disagree. But like the national board, or even our board, almost any group of ACLUers, you agree in principle, and you may not agree on the particular issue at the time. There's a lot of dissent about our support of protesters at the abortion clinics. And as a matter of fact, the local, the former president of our board resigned as president, not from the board, but as president, because ACLU had a friend of the court brief in support of the protesters out in Oregon who were in that big case. And but she hasn't dropped out of the ACLU. Mm-hmm. So yes, you have a lot of arguments and dissent, and there's very little that is done unanimously. But you realize that the major principle is what's important, and if you belong to the ACLU, you realize it's not going to be a unanimous organization, and one of the things we support is dissent. So we support it in our own organization.
What do you think through your involvement with the ACLU you've contributed to the Pittsburgh community?
Well, I think education on issues of ACLU importance and making peace, certainly bringing awareness, also helping the media. I was just, called fairly recently because they still have my phone number, my home number at Channel 11, and they didn't have Vic's and they had mine, so they called me, and I was on television about having to be, wasn't so much ACLU, although they called me because I was involved with ACLU, but it had to do with mental health and the Baumgarten case, but was a were the ACLU as opposed to the Megan law, and they was a thought of extending it to people who are mentally ill. So I spoke out about that.
Could you mention what the Megan law was?
The Megan law is has to do with sex offenders and those who are considered violent, predatory sex offenders have to register when they come out of jail and have served their time, have to register with the police, and their address, et cetera, is advertised around the neighborhood.
I have a question. I don't know if you can answer this, but what do you have one case that was most outstanding of all the other cases that you felt was the most important one?
I don't know if any, each case is important to the individual who's involved. I thought the Kresh case was extremely important. The cases involving religion are particularly important that we've handled. And I don't know if, there are an awful lot of cases that have come before me. As I say, all of them really had some element of them and that was pretty important. But principally, free speech and the separation of religion, and particularly being Jewish, I feel it's extremely important that we're not considered a Christian nation. And many people... Many people do, mm-hmm. and think we're founded on Christian principles, et cetera, et cetera. I think that's very dangerous for any minority religion, and particularly Jews. So I'm particularly concerned with those cases, and that's why I think they're invaluable.
At the time when you were involved with the ACLU, it was a formative time in your family's life with your children growing up and mm-hmm. working out of your home.
Mm-hmm.
Could you talk about the influence of the organization on your family life and how?
Well, I hope it made them certainly all aware of civil liberty issues, and my oldest son became extremely anti-Vietnam War and was very much involved in demonstrating and getting arrested, a variety of things involved with that. And I think that, they became, very well aware of it, accepting also of other people's opinions and understanding, I think, much more of our constitutional rights and responsibilities than, unfortunately, many people learn in school. So I think, all in all, it was extremely, extremely helpful. And it was just happened. I mean, I wasn't out of the house. I was here, pretty much while they were young. And certainly while they were in elementary school, And then when they went off to high school, I was, you know, out of the office. I mean, out at the office, but that wasn't that far away. It was in Oakland, so if I needed to do anything, I could be back and forth. And that's, I think, very, very helpful for them.
What was your husband, what kind of work or what kind of community involvement was your husband doing at that time?
He didn't do too much community involvement. He certainly supported the ACLU and all the other organizations I belonged to. He worked actually for, first for USX, which was US Steel at the time he worked for them, and doing research. He was in research in Monroeville. And then he worked for the government, actually, Bureau of Mines, and did the same type of thing. He first worked for the Bureau of Mines, then for U.S. Steel, then back to the Bureau of Mines.
What kind of research?
It was scientific chemical research, but he was doing not the research particularly, but helping the, but work designing the implements that they used, that they needed. He did one of the first, what do you call it now? Try anything. I'll think of it. But it's now used commonly. It wasn't then. Something magnifier. But he did, he would, researchers would come to him and say, I want to test this project or that theory or whatever, and he would design something that would work, that would do it for them.
I think you had said that you were involved with the ACLU in a professional manner till 1993? 93. What kinds of things have you been doing?
Since then? Yeah. Well, I'm very involved with National Council. I'm on the board. I'm very involved with all this type of legislation. I'm very involved with League of Women Voters. Let's see. I'm do Meals on Wheels. I do pet therapy for the Animal Rescue League. I work and have taught a bit at all, which is the I should know. All at CMU.
For lifelong.
Right. Exactly. So I've taught several courses there, and have taken a number of things there, and then I work in the office there. I was just doing that yesterday. And, Family Services of Western Pennsylvania on the board there. I was formerly I've been there 6 years, so now I'm going to, this is my last year.
Family Services
of Western Pennsylvania. And, I was doing the public relations fundraising. Did I mention I worked for an advertising agency when I first came out of
the hat company? You did the
Shoop. I was with Shoop Advertising. Yeah, when the hat. That was when that was Shoop. 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 Shoop Advertising. And I did, and that was when I had the hat people. Tucker Hats was the name of it. Fifth Avenue, exactly. Tucker Hats, right. So I did that. So I was involved, so I have advertising background, and so I was involved with public relations and fundraising for Family Services. There are probably a number of other organizations that I do volunteer work for, unfortunately. Mental Health, yeah, United Mental Health, which is now Mental Health Association of Allegheny County. And I've been longtime chair of the advocacy committee there. Used to be on the board.
Also, you work for, Association for Retired?
Oh, yeah, ARC. Very much. In fact, I just had a meeting there 2 days ago. I'm on the personnel committee. I used to be on the board for a number of years.
I'm kind of curious what you did with the animals. You said you...
Oh, pet therapy. I take dogs and cats over to the nursing homes. It's not therapy for the pets, it's therapy for them there. You know? It's called pet therapy. But you don't do therapy with the animals. Yeah, I'm involved with ARC. So I've had a lot of experience working with handicapped women. I'm in the UJF Special Needs Task Force, and I work with that. I was on the committee to bring the Cuban group to Pittsburgh, and I've been to Cuba with it.
Can you say more about that exhibit, which is...
Yeah, it's just winding down. Did you get a chance to get over it?
Today.
Yeah.
Today. I was rising at the 26th at the clinic.
Pictures were amazing.
Yes, aren't they? Aren't they terrific?
Can you tell a little bit about
them? Well, the idea is to spread the word of the Jewish involvement in Cuba and what's going on there and how they desperately need, as do all Cubans, medical supplies, education supplies, etc. They have there's a considerable, not as big as it used to be, but a considerable Jewish population in Cuba, and they really depend on people in the United States to bring in medical supplies, and we also brought things to the dentists, the hospitals, and the dental clinics that weren't. I mean, they don't just deal with Jews, and to the hospitals and things of that sort. They have free medical care and free education, but they don't have the equipment that really would help, that they need. I mean, they're way back in the 40s and 50s in their equipment. So it's vital that we, you know, we don't desert them. And this was to make the public, the Jewish public, aware of what's going on in Cuba and how important it is to stay in touch. And I think we succeeded. I don't know if we succeeded tremendously, but certainly succeeded moderately. And if we decided to do it again, I mean, it would build on it, on the awareness. And that was the idea. Yeah. Exactly. People walking through would certainly see it, and they certainly get a big walk through. And it was very good to have the JCC, you know, involved.
And I think teachers took students.
That's right.
From all the schools.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Exactly.
What's your source of motivation for giving so much of yourself to the community?
Well, I think I got that a lot from my mother. She did. She was very involved with temple activities. She worked in the sewing committee, and she was very involved with council. I just feel that I can't understand that people should, that you've got to give to the community and make it a better community, that you can't rely on government to do it. You really... have to be a volunteer. I think the United States is one of the leaders in volunteerism in the world, and I think it's a tremendous thing. It helps both the person you're helping, and I think it helps the volunteer more by doing something that you see you're helping somebody else. So I can't see not volunteering. It's vital.
I think after we turned off the tape last week and we were chatting, you talked a little bit about volunteering with your mother at the Irene Kaufman Settlement House.
Oh, well, yeah, we used to go there. I don't know if it was, that was down on Center Avenue. And, I remember going there quite well. Actually, we did a lot of work, I think, with my mother did in helping people who were... new immigrants, Jewish immigrants to the United States, and helping with language and things of that sort, reading. We did a lot of that. She did. I think I tagged along, as I recall. But we would go down. I remember the steps going up. And in fact, the building still is sort of involved with the Hill House now. Yeah, part of that, so I see it when I go down there. Yeah. But that was very interesting. The whole, you know, the Hill used to be Jewish, and pretty much so until you had the riots a lot. And we used to go down to a lot of things down there. The Samarini's used to be down there, a Syrian restaurant. Then it moved up, pretty much it's out of existence now. It was a Syrian restaurant that was down the hill. I used to go over to Crawford Street to the jazz and things. It was very common to do that and quite safe. There was no problems. You'd go down, you'd travel around the city much more than you do now for some reason. And as I say, we used to go out to Homewood a lot, do our shopping out there. Used to go downtown, used to go across the north side. Didn't go so much south side. South side wasn't built up as much. But the north side was, and the hill a lot, and Homewood, go a lot to Homewood.
You had mentioned going to the butcher in Homewood.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to get back to that. What kind of shopping did you do there, and what kinds of shopping?
There's a butcher shop, I think it was on Kelly Street, by all our meats there. We also, speaking of buying things, you would go down the Market Square, and or up on Murray Avenue, buy your chicken, and you'd get the live chicken. I mean, you wouldn't get the live chicken, but you would. They had the live chicken, and then you would feel it, cluck, 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 you know, to see, get a, and you'd say, okay, this chicken's good, cluck, cluck, and they'd go back, and feathers would fly, and you'd catch your chicken. I mean, literally, feathers would fly. And then they had chicken legs. I don't know, whatever happened to chicken legs. Chickens still have legs, but they used to have legs, used to buy legs, used to get legs. You also used to get liver, little livers and kidneys a lot, for your animals, for your cats, free. Get a lot of stuff free. You'd get kidneys free, you'd get the liver free, you'd get bones free for your animals. That was just real common.
I mean, all the time. What do you do with the chicken
legs? Oh, you eat them. You don't, you know, cook them, and you fry them like, you know, a lot of people eat them. I wasn't thrilled with chicken legs, but you always could get chicken legs. And then they stopped selling chicken legs. People stopped eating chicken. Probably wasn't good for you. It was very fatty, very fatty. But for that matter, I used to use a lot of fat, you know, whatever. But we'd go fruit place out in Homewood, particularly, as I say, the meat place in Homewood on Kelly Street. And I think there was fruit, there was chicken people down on Murray Avenue.
Greenberg's? Was it Greenberg's you went to?
Hmm? Yeah.
Was it Greenberg's at that time?
Mm-hmm. And, of course, Weinstein's and other restaurants a lot down there. And then when you'd go into Weinstein's, they would put pickles on the table. You know, not the deal, but the type of pickles. You'd always have them in the center and peppers and things like that. You would have in the center of the table.
Homewood and the Hill integrated then? Were there a lot of blacks and whites living?
There were blacks living on the Hill, and they came in more, and Homewood definitely, you know, had blacks, but it was quite integrated. Yeah.
Why mm-hmm. Homewood? Why was there so much shopping opportunity in Homewood at that time?
That's where the stores were.
Was there was it a main transportation
depot? No, we drove there, as I recall. Isn't that far? It's very close. Yeah. We drove there. And we used to, I remember, always have a Buick. Every 2 years, you'd buy a Buick. and cars were very, I would say, important. Now they're not important at all to me. But I don't mean that I don't have a car, yes, but I mean what kind of a car I have is not that vital. In those days, when you got your car, you would drive it around and show everybody, show all your friends. Seems sort of stupid now, but we did that, right? Everybody did it. You would drive around and everybody, all your friends would come over and look at it and admire the car.
Speaking about transportation, yeah. I know that you were used to ride around on a motorcycle.
Yeah, I just sold it just this last week.
Did you go all over the city in the motorcycle?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I had it for almost 20 years.
We are just about out of tape, so
okay.
We'll continue the next time.
All right.